All right, everybody, welcome back to the Crypto 101 podcast presented by Gemini, your bridge to the future of money. And happy Friday, folks. It is a very exciting Friday. We have a little bit of green price action, which is always exciting to see. But we have with us none other than Brendan to do a deep dive on the technical analysis side. So if you're tuning into this episode, you want technical analysis, you want to see what's going on with Bitcoin, Ethereum, all the altcoins, Brendan's going to do that for you right at the top of the episode. And then, of course, we're going to go over all the news because continuously, fundamentally, bullish news across the board again this week. More importantly, specifically from Davos, Switzerland, the World Economic Forum was going on this week, and crypto again was the talk of the town. Everything from the President of the United States to Coinbase to BlackRock, everybody was there and had a bunch of sound bites. So we do have a heavy soundbite episode, so I hope everybody enjoys that. But we are going to kick it off with Brendan with the charts. Brendan, happy Friday, my friend. Welcome back to the rundown. Feels like maybe it's been a week or two without you, but indeed, we got a little green on the board today, huh?
We got a little bit of green on the board. Happy freaking Friday to everyone that's listening here. It is January 23rd, 2026. And I mean, Tivo, you hit the nail on the head. Lots of talk about prices are moving. We saw a steep move down to start off the week. We're rallying back up to end the week. And we've gotten a lot of news. So there's a lot of different catalysts to talk about. Davos, different FUD that has come and gone, you know, in regards to the Clarity Act and macroeconomic and geopolitical events and you name it. I mean, there's just been stuff all over the place. And crypto, as one of the leading risk-on assets, has been all over the place reacting to this stuff. So it's good, it's bad, it's good, it's bad. And like Tivo said, I mean, man, we got a lot of different clips and images and charts and graphics to show. So if you are a listener on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or Teachable or anywhere else, Audible, excuse me, you need to go over to our YouTube channel. It's the Crypto 101 Podcast on YouTube. That's where you're going to get to see all the videos, all the clips, all the images. So make sure you check us out on YouTube if you are interested in that. But Tivo, I mean, let's just start it off with the charts here. Let's just take a quick look at the charts so that everyone can understand what's going on and where the crypto market is moving here. Because we have Bitcoin moving back above $90,000. And pretty much it's just a sea of green today. And so let's go ahead and throw up this screen share so that everyone can see it with me. But this is what we're looking at on Bitcoin. Again, rallying off around 87K. We're up about $3,000 in the last 48 hours or so, and we're back up to around $90,500. So Bitcoin's green 1%, Ethereum's green 1%, XRP's green 1%. Aerodrome, watch out, it's up 6.5% on the day. And then from there on, you know, you just have a lot of different movers. Some cryptos that are up big, you know, you have Ondo, which is up 4.5%. Pepe, which is up 4.5%, Clearpool 6%. And then you have some that are just sitting neutral for the most part, some other big winners here and there. But, you know, lots of just kind of mixed reactions here. But for the most part, it's a sea of green when it comes to the crypto market on this Friday. And so let's just kick it off with Bitcoin because it's been a pretty choppy zone. It's been a really frothy zone. And I know it's made investors frustrated, right? You know, we do a lot of trading over here, and I've seen a lot of frustration and kind of mixed reactions about this zone because, you know, we started off in October, right? We had this big liquidation event, move down, consolidation, move down, consolidation, move down. And then this is where the real chop began because you kind of had this ultimate down point. You know, we're consolidating up, chopping back and forth. Oh, we broke above the 20. We are pushing slightly higher in here. And then it fell back below the 20-day moving average, rejected, went back to the lows, stopped a lot of people out. And then it broke the 50 and it moved up to higher highs. And we're above the moving averages. You saw the golden cross. You saw the higher high push. And on this move, it was the highest level of green day volumes that we've seen since April 7th and 9th, which was the bottom of the tariff crash. And so everyone is getting all excited. You're seeing increasing levels of volume, new highs on Bitcoin, breakouts, the moving averages crossing upwards and pointing to the upside. And then we got wiped out again, and a lot of people got liquidated. And so that's been the name of the game here lately is just, hey, it's a choppy price action zone. You had all the longs get liquidated, then all the shorts get liquidated, then all the longs get liquidated, then all the shorts, then all the longs and the shorts, and then the longs, and you go back and forth, and each side's getting liquidated again and again. And everyone's just been getting kind of wiped out in this zone if you've been trying to trade it. You've had false breakouts to the upside, false breakdowns to the downside. And this kind of paints the full picture of what's going on in here. And it's, you know, hey, it looks like we're in a rising channel. And part of this was due to the news that we're going to talk about. I think a big reason why we saw this big tick down this week was because there was all sorts of different pieces of FUD, which stands for fear, uncertainty, and doubt. You had FUD in regards to the whole Greenland situation. You had FUD in regards to tariffs and trade war stuff between the USA and Europe and other countries. You had FUD over this and that and what was being said at Davos, and some was good, some was bad. But as the week moved on, you started to see a lot of these different negative catalysts and negative FUD events begin to get resolved.
New year usually means new devices. Phones, laptops, tablets, from grandma all the way down to the kids, or at least spending more time online. That's been a good reminder to actually think about digital security again. I've been using Webroot, specifically their Total Protection Plan, which is an all-in-one option if you want coverage beyond just antivirus. What stood out to me is that it combines real-time antivirus protection against things like malware and phishing scams, identity monitoring with alerts, and this is a big one, up to $1 million in expense reimbursement for eligible out-of-pocket costs if identity theft ever becomes an issue. Total Protection also includes tools like a password manager and web threat protection that blocks malicious sites before you visit them, plus options to protect multiple devices and even family members, all without slowing your system down or throwing constant pop-ups at you. So here's the deal. New year, new device. Whether you're upgrading tech or sticking with what you've got, now's the time to protect all your devices at 60% off with Webroot's trusted cybersecurity solutions. Visit webroot.com/crypto101 and get 60% off. Again, that's webroot.com, webroot.com/crypto101 for 60% off. This offer is only available through the Crypto 101 link, so make sure you use it. webroot.com/crypto101 and get up to 60% off their Total Protection Plan. This year, choose protection that's right for you and live a better digital life with Webroot. Are you interested in effortlessly growing your Bitcoin portfolio? I sure am. The Gemini credit card earns you Bitcoin back on every purchase. Use it just like any other credit card when you buy lunch, gas, or even just your weekly groceries, and you'll earn up to 4% back instantly in Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos straight to your account. All that with no annual fee, and right now you can grab a $200 Bitcoin welcome bonus. It's the easiest way to start building your Bitcoin stack. Guys, you've heard us talk about Gemini now every single episode, and we love and appreciate that they've been a sponsor because we use their products, whether it's the exchange or the card. They have been leaders in the space for so long. So if you're interested in earning crypto rewards for your everyday spending, go to Gemini.com/card to learn more. Terms apply. See the link in the description for more information regarding rates and fees.
Issued by WebBank. To qualify for the $200 crypto intro bonus, you must spend $3,000 in your first 90 days. Some exclusions to instant rewards apply. This is not investment advice, and trading crypto involves risk. Check Gemini's website for more details on rates and fees.
Hey, football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown in the game, but his teammate scores instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you a second chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown score second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. With BetMGM's second chance offer, you have a chance to keep the fun going after the first player crosses the goal line. Try a first TD score wager with confidence today. BetMGM, make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This specific promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, Pennsylvania, Puerto Rico, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. 1-800-NEXT-STEP for Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 for Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-ALL for Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 for Puerto Rico. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards paid back in unrestricted withdrawable funds. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Well, again, we're going to talk about that a little bit later, but that was a huge contributing factor as to why we've seen this volatility. And as it's getting resolved, you are seeing prices move back to the upside. Now, the only fear that I have here, TiVo, is if you're looking at the chart, you do have this failure to break higher. And then on the way down, you didn't catch back on kind of these prior highs over here, this prior resistance level. You didn't catch on that. You didn't catch on the 20-day. You didn't catch on the 50-day. You pretty much just went straight through every possible short-term support, straight to the bottom of this climbing support line, as we've kind of seen in here, and found a little bit of support down there. My fear here is that if you kind of zoom this out to a weekly time frame, you can see this pretty clearly. My fear here is that this looks like it's a move to the downside followed by a rising channel upwards. Now, when you get anything where it's like a move to the downside followed by a rising channel, it's typically called a bear flag, and that's not the best thing to see or witness. And so when we go back to the daily chart here, the one-day chart, you can see that, you know, we have been, for the most part, kind of having this deeper move downwards followed by this back and forth as we rise in this channel around. So there's two ways to look at it. Number one, hey, we're at support, and nothing has 100% hit rate. So just because it's a rising channel, it's like, hey, well, number one, we're at support. The support has not broken yet. So that's a good thing to see. And it's, you know, just because it's maybe more probable to break downwards doesn't mean that it has to be. So the other half of this is saying, hey, you know, this is a bearish formation. We did just see a failure to break higher. We just saw a failure of bullish structure. And now we're beneath the 20-day, beneath the 50-day, back at support inside of a bearish formation. And I think there's a little bit of fears around that. And I think everyone should just be aware here and say, hey, number one, we're obviously very bullish on the long term of crypto. But in the short to midterm here, if you do kind of see a breakdown below here, below 86, below 85, anywhere down in there, then I think there is a reasonable cause to be maybe a little bit more nervous about Bitcoin in the shorter term. Because if you start getting a breakdown below here, I think you could have about a 10% plus move in either direction. So if we start getting a breakout higher, I think you could easily go back to 106 to 1010. If you get a breakdown lower, you could easily have a 10 plus percent move to the downside. And that could bring Bitcoin back to the mid to low 80s, dare I even say somewhere in the 70s. And that's something that's on the table here. And so what we're seeing across the board is a huge squeeze in consolidation amongst the large caps. You're seeing it happen here on Bitcoin. As we move forward, you're seeing the squeeze kind of happen over here on Ethereum. You have this move down right here, followed by a pennant and price action squeezing. And we're beneath both of the moving averages. We're getting beneath support a little bit. And we're consolidating, just like on Bitcoin, around or below that 50-day moving average. On Solana, similar story. Move down, big consolidation time. Now we're back beneath the short-term moving averages. For XRP, multi-month kind of downwards trend line where you've just continually been rejecting and rejecting and rejecting this trend line. And now you're putting a lot of pressure into this big, you know, year-long support that's been just around or below the $2 area. And so for the XRP fans, you're saying, hey, you know, obviously price action squeezing a little bit to the downside here. You want to see a break of that trend line. And if you do, you can actually have a really big rally. It's a matter of, does it have the strength to break through this? And if not, a failure lower, again, could be a pretty sizable move. Even with BNB, one of the larger cryptos out there, up there with like Ethereum and Solana and XRP and a lot of these other ones, sitting around a $123 billion market cap. Similar story. We kind of have the move off the highs, rising channel, breakdown, bear flag, breakdown, big rising channel over in here. And so what you're seeing is just consolidation and squeezing of both support and resistance levels across all of the major large caps. And so I think all eyes need to be on here. If you are a fan of the crypto market, keep a close eye on the market. We're seeing a big squeeze happen. And so regardless of what happens of this squeeze, there's a big move. I think that's coming. And that's the way that I look at this, is saying, hey, if we get a breakout to the upside, again, easily could be double-digit moves for a lot of these large caps. I'm saying 10-plus percent is something that is very, very achievable on this kind of move. So if you see a breakout to the upside, easily 10, 15, 20% move is on the table. If you're having a breakdown, easily, again, 10, 15, maybe, I think 20% is probably pushing it, but easily over 10% is a fully possible move here, which is big, you know, for these assets that are worth hundreds of billions or trillions of dollars in market cap. And so on the technical side, Tebow, that's what I'm watching out for. It feels like we really are putting max pressure. Not where we might not be at max pressure yet, but we're working our way towards putting some serious pressure into the large caps. And I think that that is going to be a huge factor pushing us forward. And so that's what I'm seeing across the board. You know, I know everyone's wondering about altcoins. One of the things I've seen about altcoins, and I really want to trade some alts here soon, I'm just waiting to see a bit more of a reversal. If you look at the others chart, and what this is saying, hey, if you take the top, if you take all of cryptocurrency and you remove the top 10 largest market caps, so you remove the top 10 cryptos by size, and you take those out of the equation, that is what this chart shows, is the essentially the altcoin market without the top 10 largest cryptos like Bitcoin, Ethereum, Solana, XRP, BNB, etc. And when you look at that, you know, this has been in a downtrend for over a year now, about 13, 14 months. You saw it peak towards the end of 2024, beginning of 2025, rally down, rally up at a significantly lower high, rally all the way back down. And so I'm really waiting to see a turnaround of this others chart, which better represents the general altcoin population. And I think that once we see that, we can get a better indication of when these altcoins are outperforming as opposed to underperforming. And I think that's where the real opportunity kind of comes out of this. And so, listen, lots to understand, lots to look at. We're going to definitely make sure to keep everyone posted. But plenty that's going on here in the world of crypto, TiVo. And yeah, I mean, I don't know if I missed anything there. Yeah.
No, you're crushing it. I mean, it's just one of those times where, you know, technical analysis is one of the tools that you need in the tool bag. And I know that, you know, you come on and do this for us, you know, once a week, or and then we do little deeper dives. But specifically, if you want to learn more about the bull flags and the charting and the technicals and the skills that Brendan has, we do talk about his 6-week course and how it's not always open. This week it is. So if you go down to the link, the first link in the description is a link to join Brendan for his 6-week course. It involves 2 live trading sessions. So basically you get to do this with Brendan for an hour twice a week, plus 6 weeks of course content to learn the technicals. And again, we believe in education is one of the best tool sets, and technical analysis is one of the number one things that we look at in the crypto markets. And so, you know, we think now's a good time, if any, to start learning and kind of making your moves and understanding how to use that tool. So if you're interested in the program, the link is below for you. And if you stay to the end of the show, I was thinking we got a lot of people in the chat. We got Ron, we got Juan, we got Zen. We got a couple other people. I know Grant's out there. If you guys stay at the end of the show, if you want, we could maybe take some tickers from the crowd and do some more charting for people if they stick around to the end of the show. But we'll move on and we'll do that at the end. There was a lot going on this week, Brendan. Davos, the World Economic Forum. You had a different name for it you gave. I don't want to take credit for it. What was the word you came up with?
I think I said it was something like it should have been called the World Crypto Forum with how much crypto was getting talked about.
Should have been the World Crypto Forum. I can't disagree with you. So basically this next segment, there was a lot. So the World Economic Forum happened in Davos and the president gave a speech yesterday. Everybody was there from business, finance. Elon Musk wasn't even supposed to be there. He flew in and took the stage as he likes to do to make a little noise. So this next segment, I mean, I don't necessarily know which one's going to spark us to have conversation, but we have a couple video clips. And again, when there's a world stage like this, the world stage, the World Economic Forum is talking about crypto, it's our job to, I think, bring it to you and discuss. So we have a bunch of different clips. I don't know which ones will inspire us the most, but we'll start off with the president on stage kind of mentioning the Clarity Act, and obviously that involves crypto. So let's take a look.
To unleash innovation and savings and financing, I'm also working to ensure America remains the crypto capital of the world. And to that end, last year, I signed the landmark Genius Act into law. Now Congress is working very hard on crypto market structure, legislation, Bitcoin, all of them, which I hope to sign very soon, unlock.
So I pulled up this, you know, obviously just mentioning the Clarity Act. There was a little hiccup on it last week. Markets didn't love it. And Brian Armstrong, which I do have a clip of him, we'll pull up next. But specifically for the Clarity Act, it looks like the there's an updated market structure bill running around. And the next meeting for it is next week. So they are, I just see a lot of chatter on it. I'm not personally in breaking down these bills and seeing what's changed and what's not, but there's a lot of progress going on. And again, this is basically just a press round for all these people to use their megaphones and speak. So we'll pull up Brian Armstrong next to hear what he was saying out in Switzerland this week.
Tell us what happened exactly last week.
Yeah, so last year we got the Genius Act passed. That was a great piece of legislation for crypto. And now what everyone's working on is called market structure, right? The non-stablecoin crypto assets. And there's been a ton of hard work. You know, the Senate has been amazing to work with. There's a lot of constituents coming in to offer their opinion, including the crypto industry. And of course, Coinbase has a point of view, although we don't represent the crypto industry. And we saw some draft text midnight on Monday night.
Right.
Our lawyers started looking at it on Tuesday. I was in DC on Wednesday. We started to notice some pretty serious issues in the draft text that we had a concern with. And it didn't appear to be a plan to actually get that fixed coming out of a Senate Banking Committee markup. And so we actually felt like we had an obligation to go out and defend our customers' rights and say, we have some issues here. We were careful not to comment on what the Senate should do in terms of markup or not, but they did decide to postpone it. And so now there's an opportunity for us to come back and chat with the bank CEOs and see what would create a win-win outcome here.
So good take. Obviously, we've kind of broke down his position of where they were and, you know, very Coinbase focused, self-serving focused, but, you know, just raising their hand and saying, hey, this isn't, you know, good for the customers. The banks are controlling, especially around the yield and the stable coins. And then the last one here, Brendan, I'm going to play and then we'll have an open discussion is David Sacks, our crypto czar. So somebody that's in the administration. So let's hear what he had to say on the topic and then we'll break it down.
A good compromise is everyone leaves a little bit unhappy,
right?
But I think what's going to happen is that after market structure passes, the banks are going to get fully into the crypto industry. So we're not going to have a separate banking industry and crypto industry. It's going to be one digital assets industry. And I think
their
opinions are going to evolve over time. And yes, I bet you over time, the banks like the idea of paying yield because they're going to be in the stablecoin business.
But will they also be regulated the same way? And I guess that's a big, I mean, the banks will say, hey, if they get to do all the same things we do, how come they don't get regulated the same way?
Well, I guess because they're offering slightly different products, right?
Yeah.
So, but I mean, everyone offering the same product should be regulated in the same way. And we want to get to that harmonization. A good compromise is everyone leaves a little.
Good compromises. Everybody leaves a little bit unhappy. That's I don't know if that's the art of the deal in that book specifically, but that is a good rule of life for compromising. So, you know, sounds like David Sacks is hearing some feedback and obviously, you know, has big ties with the banks and, you know, is working as the crypto AI czar. So she's the one that's really trying to tie it all together. Any of those sound bites speak to you, Brendan? Obviously the market structure, like I pulled up the slide before, was new meeting for January 27th to keep pushing this forward. But thoughts from Davos?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of the big takeaway that I had is that there's a lot of anticipation. There's a lot of people getting prepared. But most importantly, there's a lot of people and most people, especially the institutional side, continues to sit on the sidelines until maybe we get this figured out, because you have both the market structure bill and the Clarity Act. And it seems like everyone's waiting for something to happen with those. I mean, David Sacks has essentially said that himself. He said, you know, banks are waiting on the sidelines for this to get passed. You're seeing the same thing with the Clarity Act. People are waiting on the sidelines for the Clarity Act to get passed. Why? Well, we've talked about this the past couple of weeks. It's the fact that they want clarity on regulation so that they can know exactly what they can and what they can't do without putting themselves in trouble. Because under the previous administration, we saw cryptos get added, cryptos get taken away. New products and features get added, new products and features get taken away. We saw companies do things and then they'd go disappear. And this was this kind of back and forth. And so a lot of people are waiting on the sidelines saying, hey, let us get clarity, let us get structure, which is the primary purpose of these two different things. And they're waiting to see that. And I think once we get both clarity and structure set up, the floodgates open to a degree. And it's funny because I just talked to, I believe it was the one of the co-founders of Tether. And he was saying the same thing. He's like, the floodgates are waiting to be open, but it's dependent upon this bill and how it's written and what's inside of it. And so we continue to see themes from people in places all over saying the same thing. And it's at times like these where you don't need to overthink it. They're telling you exactly what's happening. And, you know, people always want to kind of overthink it and think, oh, well, maybe they mean something cryptic. Well, maybe we can take it for face value in what they're telling us. So let's be patient here. Let's see this stuff get passed. Let's see what's inside of it. And then I think that it has the potential to open up the floodgates. And that's the primary thing that we've seen from this. I think the other thing, TiVo, and I know we have this on the outline, is that a lot of FUD was going away here. You started to see at Davos as well, a lot of the fears about Greenland and macroeconomics and geopolitical tensions and tariffs and all these things started to disappear. Everyone got together. Guess what? They started talking it out. They started creating solutions. And all this stuff looks like it's at least going away. Or in the very least, it looks like it's de-escalating across the board. And so what happens? Oh, well, fear, uncertainty, and doubt, which we call FUD, is going away. And when that happens, guess what? Everyone's saying, okay, I feel more comfortable investing. It looks like we are working towards solutions. And because of that, people are feeling more risk on with their money. Here we have Bitcoin over the last 3 days starting to piece together a couple of green days in a row, and everything's moving back to the upside. So again, not saying things can't go lower and they can't re-escalate, but you know, we're at least seeing some de-escalation here, and tensions are falling, and prices are liking it. Prices are liking it.
Yeah, I think it's a great point of everybody getting together. You know, we kind of talked, whether it was you or Brian or whoever we've had on the rundown, of saying like, hey, we've seen this dance before. The, you know, Liberation Day was the first time the market had to digest kind of the volatility of the administration. And this, I think for people that have cooler heads and are trying to look past the politics of it and just trying to be investors, are trying to, you know, play the game a little bit better than the people who are just, you know, blowing gaskets due to politics, is, you know, the Greenland thing is a discussion that the administration clearly wants to have. But, you know, military action of taking over Greenland here, as you can see, the memes were all time this week leading into them all getting together. And like you said, cooler heads prevail. And I think we got a clip from CZ that we'll transition to. So CZ kind of, you know, got out of his pardon, out of jail, running around. You know, first time I've kind of seen him on the U.S. kind of business channels running around, because he was in Davos. I saw him say, I think he was on CNBC. It was like 2026 is a Bitcoin super cycle. And the guy was like, 2026? He's like, yeah, 2026, Bitcoin super cycle. It's going to happen. So CZ, as always, permable, but... we had the quote here talking about governments tokenizing their assets. It's about 90 seconds. We don't play CZ that much, so let's hear what he had to say on stage at Davos.
Crypto space, there's really two proven industries, the exchanges and stable coins. Those are large businesses. I'm really excited about three new more. I think tokenization is a huge one. I'm talking with probably a dozen governments about tokenizing some of their assets, because this way the government can actually realize the financial gains first and use that to develop those industries, extractions, the trading markets, et cetera. Payments is something that we've tried, have not really conquered in, have not really started in crypto. We tried, but nobody really pays in crypto. But I think now we're seeing the convergence of traditional payment methods being behind the scenes being supported by crypto. So the spenders swipe a card, crypto gets deducted from their account, the merchants gets US dollars or euros or however, whatever they get. So now when we have those bridges, I think payments is gonna come pretty big. The third one is, what you guys all mentioned, is AI. The native currency for AI agent is going to be crypto. They're not going to use bank cards. They're not going to swipe credit cards. They're going to, crypto blockchain is the most native technology interface for AI agents. So
it does make sense why all of this is obviously super important. I think we can agree that we're super biased in that aspect, but it does make sense that the Clarity Act and all this stuff is going to take a lot of time, and there's a lot of opinions, because I do agree with that kind of statement that all this kind of just transcends into the future of all these things, AI, stablecoins, crypto, payments, these new rails of the new financial system are being built. And I think we've kind of done a good job on the show of again, not trying to be too political, but it is huge. This legislation that goes through is something that sets up the system for the next generation of finance. And it's exciting, but it's also a little scary because you want it, you know, you definitely want it to be done right. And as we know, it's hard to do that down in DC.
Yeah. And what stood out to me is he said, I'm talking to about a dozen different countries about tokenization. And as we'll see with a couple of these other clips, tokenization was one of the huge talking points of this. Larry Fink, who's been a huge fan of this, he was there talking about it. He was there and kind of backing up the idea. JP Morgan, who's opened up, or not JP Morgan, Jamie Dimon from JP Morgan was there, and he was obviously been very pro this. You have CZ talking about it. You had all these other people. And we'll see in the future clips, but it was a big talking point. And he's right, and the world's opening up to this. And when it comes to AI agents, he makes a really good point where AI agents, they aren't people. They don't have birth certificates. They don't have social security numbers. They cannot have a bank account. And so what they do here is they say, okay, well, since they can't have a bank account and an identity and all these things, they can have a cryptocurrency wallet. And that's one of the things that we've seen popular is that you can actually create these AI agents, which for people who don't know what an AI agent is, it's an AI that is really hyper-focused on doing something specific that you have instructed it and trained it towards. So you can make it operate it. And if you give it a crypto wallet, you're essentially giving it money that it can transact with. So if it needs to go do something and pay for something and get something done, it can exchange the cryptocurrency in the wallet that you've given it as a means of payment for whatever they need. And so he's right in the sense that a lot of these AI agents can really only function with crypto wallets because under the current stuff that we have set up, under the current rules and regulations and infrastructure, they simply cannot operate with a bank account or with fiat. And so the only way that these things can actually work and operate and have a means of monetary exchange and transaction is with crypto and with the crypto wallet. And we've seen that become, I would say, really popular and arguably really successful as well. And we've talked to some of these big AI founders about this stuff, and they love it. And they've had some pretty funny stories as well about what they've had these things go and do, and these things have been able to go and hire people off of Fiverr, and they have really good problem solving. And it's like, oh, well, we need something done. And then they go to Fiverr or Upwork, and then they hire someone to do it, and then it comes back, and they get what they need. And it's crazy. It really is crazy. And so crypto kind of is acting, at least for the moment, as the backbone that enables mm-hmm. that to even be possible in the first place.
Yeah, and it's just a common talking point. You put this clip up. This is a quick one, but it's BNY Mellon CEO basically saying, you know, AI, Bitcoin, Ethereum, and crypto.
We're excited about AI.
Always appreciate talking to you.
We're excited about AI. We're excited about digital assets. We're excited about innovation. We're excited about our people. And all of that is for serving our customers. And so you can feel that in the halls of the company today. And that's a fun thing.
It's the main talking point. Everybody from, you know, BlackRock down to BNY Mellon. And that's why your regional banks are going to start doing this. Did I put this in the notes? Am I Bitcoin goes public. Here we go. I'm skipping over the sheet here, but this is the point of like, it's a good yin and yang to Davos. So like we're talking about, okay, the richest people and the biggest, you know, bankers in the world go all flying to Switzerland. What are they talking about? Bitcoin, crypto, AI. And this is the trickle down effect. So I'm going to play this video, and this is a local news bit. So it's a Rockford, Illinois wealth management firm that's going to be Bitcoin based. So I thought this was really cool. And we're going to go back to Davos in a second, but this hit my mind as like a good yin and yang. So let's listen how far down the pathway this is starting to permeate.
Business is welcomed into the Forest City.
2, 3. Woo!
Local leaders gathered to celebrate the opening of Orange Horizon Wealth. The firm originated in Indiana. They help people plan their finances. New location is the first local wealth management company to add cryptocurrency to its practice, along with the first Bitcoin-based business to join the Greater Rockford Chamber of Commerce. The company feels that it's great to bring something new like Bitcoin to the Rockford community.
So we're bringing Bitcoin all the way from Davos, Switzerland, to Rockford, Illinois. That's I think that's the future. That's what we've been kind of saying on this program for years, is we're, you know, trying to build a program and education system around the future of finance. And I think nothing shows that better than kind of the last 10 minutes of this show, of taking the most powerful people in the world in the World Economic Forum, talking about, you know, Bitcoin, crypto, AI, the same things, and then be like, oh, and by the way, then you can go down to Rockford, Illinois, and it's starting to be this Bitcoin-based, you know, wealth management firm. That's the slow transition that you're going to start seeing, of people downstream, these smaller fish, are going to start buying into this. We're ahead of the curve. That's what we always like to say, right? Zoom out, and what else? We're early. And so sometimes you just got to let these things play out. And the market structure bill, we've played countless clips of, once the market structure bill gets signed, it's off to the races. The banks will get involved. The banks will get involved. So I think that's kind of the story and the fundamental positive news that we've been stuck in repeating. Not necessarily repeating. It's always new stuff, but the price has been stuck in the mud a little bit, where the fundamentals and the news has been so bullish.
Yeah. No, you're spot on, man. We're seeing it everywhere, from top to bottom, small and big. You're seeing it everywhere. And another place that we saw this recently was with BitGo. BitGo just went public, and they're going public at a $2 billion valuation. They're the first crypto company to go public this year. If you're not familiar with them, they work on like the kind of more industrial side, more institutional side of crypto management. So they have different custody options. They have self-custody. They have custodial services. They have hybrid models. And they're really big. I mean, they're a huge player in the crypto space. And that's their primary purposing function. But they went public. And I was checking, actually, to try to see. Let me check one more time to see if they are actually trading. And yeah, so they're now actually trading live. They went public around a $2 billion valuation. They launched at around $22.50 per share. And they're coming down a little bit here. But huge launch here. And so crypto continues to get attention. You're getting more of these companies going public, and the demand for it's there, which is why we're seeing it.
Yeah, and Mike Belshi, the CEO here on your screen, has been on the program multiple times. He's definitely been involved in the summits, and he's been on the podcast. So we'll circle back to try to maybe get him back on and to congratulate him and hear the vision for, you know, BitGo now that they're public. But again, just continuous, fundamentally bullish news going kind of through the through the crypto realm here. We did skip over one thing. We'll go back to we'll close out Davos with the BlackRock CEO. It's not necessarily Switzerland related, but he did have this quote here, and we're gonna play it and then we'll break it down. But he did have a nice little, like, one common blockchain really stuck out and took the crypto Twitter sphere by fire. So let's listen to Larry Fink and then some things to discuss.
I think the movement towards tokenization, decimalization is necessary. It's ironic that we see two emerging countries leading the world in tokenization and digitization of their currency. That's Brazil and India. I think we need to move very rapidly to doing that. We would be reducing fees. We would do more democratization by reducing more fees if we had all investments on a tokenized platform that you can move from a tokenized money market fund to equities and bonds and back and forth. We have one common blockchain. We can reduce corruption. So I would argue that, yes, we have more dependencies on maybe one blockchain, which we could all talk about. But that being said, activities are probably processed and more secure than ever.
So same concept where, you know, everything's coming on chain, tokenization, the same concept you've heard, you know, basically from every clip we've played for the most part. And then I just thought it was interesting that he said, you know, the one blockchain thing, like what blockchain is that going to be?
I would imagine it's Ethereum. I mean, and again, that's not me talking from bias. I'm just saying, if you look at where they put most of their resources, you have the Biddle Fund on Ethereum. You have them making the primary focus of their efforts on Ethereum, right? So I would imagine that he's talking about that. Because when you look at Bitcoin, again, they like Bitcoin. He thinks good of Bitcoin. They really like it. They have the most, their most successful ETF over there on the crypto side is Bitcoin. But when you look at Bitcoin in terms of building infrastructure, that's really not what it's used for the most part today. So when he's saying like one common blockchain, I think that's saying, hey, obviously Bitcoin's going to be there. But when it comes to infrastructure build out, that's kind of excluded because that's really not what it does. And so then you could argue, okay, well, is it Bitcoin? Is it Ethereum? Some people would maybe want to try to throw XRP or SUI or other things in there. But when you look at the bulk of their resources and efforts and their total capital that they have on chain, it primarily comes down to Ethereum. So I think that's where he's, and that's more so like what he's insinuating. That's what I would take away from that. And again, I'm a huge Solana fan too. I'm a huge Ethereum fan. So I would maybe disagree and say, hey, maybe it doesn't have to be a one winner takes it all kind of scenario. I think that we're always going to have competitors. That's the natural state of capitalism, is that so long as there is supply and demand, you're going to have competing products and platforms that are going to try to do things differently and better. And you're going to have ultimately people have the ability to choose and say, okay, well, I want to go here or there for X, Y, and Z reasons that best suit them. And that's the way that I view it. But I don't think he's wrong in the sense that, hey, I think we're going to see massive success from Ethereum. You clearly are seeing BlackRock as the largest asset manager on the planet. I mean, I don't know what it is now. You know, it was over 10, probably over $12 trillion in assets under management now. They lead the way because they are the largest. So if they're saying, hey, this is going to happen and they're excited about it and this and that, they set the standard to a degree because they are the largest asset manager on the planet. I mean, they have 14, more assets under management.
$14 trillion at the end of 2025.
$14 trillion. I mean, unreal. Dude, we're talking about more money in the single American company than most countries have in their entirety. I mean, it's ridiculous. I don't know where $14 trillion.
No, it's a great point. I'll pull this up. That's exactly where I had. I looked up country GDPs. This is a quick Google, so I'm sure this isn't to the T. But we pull this chart up. All right, $30 trillion for the U.S., $19 trillion for China, and then you know Germany, Japan, 5, 4, United Kingdom, 3. BlackRock, and again, that doesn't mean they own it. That doesn't mean that BlackRock owns everything, but they're managing it, right? They're the custody. Yeah. It gives you a lot of power, and so you could slide them in, you know, right above Germany, which is crazy. But I think it's a great point. And just shout out to the chat, because that's what this is like. Again, we're giving our opinions and thoughts, and none of it's personal financial advice. But Noah Blue says no shot. It's going to be XRP. So shout out to Noah Blue getting active in the chat. Thank you to everybody who showed up today. If you guys can, just give it a like. And then if you haven't, if you're new here on the bottom right of the screen, if you could click our logo and subscribe and give the video a like, it really helps us grow and keep doing the awesome free content. But BlackRock is a powerhouse. I kind of agree with you. I think he was hitting at Ethereum, but yeah. Maybe not. Maybe Noah's right and it's XRP. Or like you said, I think the capitalism of the whole way that this industry came to be from the start is always going to keep the innovation fresh.
Well, I think what Noah was saying is that there's no way it's XRP instead of like no shot period. It is XRP.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Noah, clarify in the comments what you think.
Noah, clarify. Are you saying it is or won't be XRP?
We'll circle back at the end because they're going to be on a little bit of a delay, like a couple seconds.
Okay.
So we'll move on and we'll come back to the chat and then we'll do, if you're still here at the end, we'll bring up the charts again with Brendan and do some tickers. So we'll get to that in about 5 minutes. The most interesting thing I saw last night, I threw it on the sheet, was Coinbase announcing a new quantum computer advisory board, publishing position papers on the state of quantum computing, issuing guidance to users, respond in real time if there's major quantum breakthroughs. Obviously, this was and will be a continued talking point to the cryptography of Bitcoin. Is it safe? Can it be broken? And then all our wallets get hacked by the quantum computer. And then the quick counter argument to that is, well, if Bitcoin gets broken, then the whole financial system is going to be broken and everybody's, you know, accounts are going to get hacked and all the banks are going to hack, which again, from 10,000 feet, I personally believe is true. But I think it's important to do stuff like this and announce stuff like this, because if you think BlackRock at $14 trillion under management isn't going to build some quantum computer board and do the research and start to implement ideas for protection, that's where all this is going. And so Bitcoin as a community, you can't stay stagnant either. I think it's good to put resources and do the research and have, you know, discourse and discussion around it. But do you feel the same, Brendan, or you have any thoughts of the board here?
Yeah, that is the big thought, is that, like, hey, we're probably closer to quantum computing than we had anticipated, and AI is accelerating that timeline and probably going to make it come sooner rather than later. And the difference here, and some threads that me and Bryce and the team have talked about behind the scenes, is that the difference is that companies, you know, specific companies can say, hey, this is the threat, let's put resources in it. And you just have the top dogs decide, and they just say, that's it, go start it. With Bitcoin, it's a little bit harder, right? Because it's decentralized in nature, and you need to have the whole, you know, the majority of people agree and then work towards this change and then, like, vote on it and implement it. And you need kind of a much more unanimous and collaborative effort between both of those happening in order to make it happen on Bitcoin. And so by nature, the process of making Bitcoin quantum computing resistant is very possible. But it's a little bit more drawn out in nature because of how Bitcoin function and operates. So I think that is the fear that people have, is that it's a little bit more easy for a centralized entity to put resources together and decide and act. And it's a little bit more difficult for Bitcoin to actually do this. And it's something that needs to be started pretty far in advance. So I like this. I think that they're doing the right thing and doing this. And it's very possible. If you think that all these other companies and everything can make sure that they're quantum resistant, then there's no reason to think that Bitcoin can't become quantum resistant or different blockchains can. In fact, there's already blockchains out there who argue that they are quantum resistant or very close to it. And so it's something that is very, very possible. It's just a matter of Bitcoin probably needs a little bit more of a head start. It needs a little bit more time to get to that point. And so that's what people are trying to highlight here. And I think Coinbase is right. Again, get this started as soon as possible. Make it ready as soon as possible.
Yeah, and it's going to take a lot more discussion and discourse from the community as well to get it done. But there's a reason why people will want to get it done, and that's a couple of our quick hitters to end the show here is, you know, somebody says nobody uses Bitcoin. False. Bitcoin has total transaction volume in 2025 came out. It's $25 trillion for Bitcoin, $16 trillion for Visa, and $9.7 trillion for MasterCard. So, you know, the world is using Bitcoin, and as it continues to grow popularity, you know, hopefully there's more use cases. And kind of like we said, it feels like the way that crypto is going to come to the masses. We've always preached this for years, is like there's going to be financial products that are going to be used, and you're not even might not even know that you're using the crypto rails. But I thought this was a cool stat.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you have almost more Bitcoin transactions than MasterCard and Visa combined. Almost, not quite there, but it's a lot. And I'm sure if you go and you were to look at Ethereum and Solana, it'd be super impressive. And I'd be interested to see what those numbers look like and kind of line up to, especially stablecoins. I'd also be pretty interested in seeing total stablecoin transactions for USDC and USDT compared to this. Maybe we'll pull those numbers and we'll talk about it in next week's episode. But
love that. We got one more fun one, but before we do that, we're gonna do some charts with Brendan to end the show, some more technical analysis. If you were in the chat and you stayed for the whole show, drop the tickers that you want Brendan to give a quick look at on the TA charts. We'll get to those. If you drop them in the comments on the chat, I'll read them off to Brendan. Final one, Brendan, this was fun. We talked about this the other day. Stake and Shake continues their Bitcoin program, and they were buying some more Bitcoin for their reserve for the company. And then after the show, I saw some more news. It was they announced a Bitcoin bonus, 21 cents. I believe it was 21 cents per hour. So every hour worked, you get 21 cents in Bitcoin. I think that's a quite a nice gesture. And it, you know, I guess if people don't want it, that's a shame. But it gives you a little bit of like financial literacy and education on Bitcoin, and it's, you know, giving back to your employees. You can't get mad about that. So Steak and Shake really going above and beyond for the Bitcoin community here, and coming up with fun ideas to get their employees involved as well.
Yeah, I'm a fan of it, man. I like it. I know if I was working and someone offered me bonuses in Bitcoin, I'd take it. Back in the day, before I was even with Crypto 101 and I was doing my own thing, different people and companies and brands would pay me for, you know, a bunch of different services and ads and other things. And a lot of the time I'd say, hey, can you pay me in Bitcoin? Can you pay me in crypto? And I was happy to take it. So I'm all for this. I'm all for it, TiVo.
I love it. Yeah, if I was a Steak and Shake employee, I'd be stoked. But we're going to transition. I'll stop sharing here, Brendan, and you can pull up the charts. One more call. Stop sharing. Here we go. One more call. We're going to do some technical analysis. Brendan's pulling up the charts now. We're getting your requests. Again, if technical analysis is something that you want to get more involved with, there is a link below in the description for Brendan's 6-week course. You literally get to do this twice a week with him for an hour. You throw in your suggestions. Plus, you get the 6-week course. You get to ask Brendan questions. You get to learn from top to bottom his expertise as our technical analysis guru. And the window is open. We always do try to promote that he has the course, but the window is not always open. So we are in the time where the window is open. So check the link below if you want more technical analysis, which we're going to do right now. Let's start off with Chainlink. Link was the first one, and they're interested, obviously, with all the news of the New York Stock Exchange using Link. Definitely, again, one of those things. A lot of bullish fundamental news around it, where the price action, maybe it's looking to find a bottom there. But super bullish news recently for Chainlink.
Yeah, some big news. When it comes to Chainlink, I mean, they are the dominant Oracle provider in the crypto space. They hold the vast majority of market share. They're extremely dominant from an Oracle perspective. And they constantly land some big deals. They have a good reputation that you don't see a lot of negative catalysts happen to them. So I think all that's good. And I like Chainlink for those reasons. From a chart perspective, you can clearly see that this area down here around $12 has been a pretty consistent support since November. You know, we bounced off this once, twice, three times, four times. You know, we continue to find a lot of support down and around this area. And so I want to take note of that. But as you zoom out here, you can see, hey, this has been a pretty long trend line. We're going all the way back to 2023. We've kind of bottomed out, rose up, formed the higher low, rose up, formed higher lows consistently. And we continue to bounce off of this trend line, you know, like half a dozen times over the last 3 or 4 years now. And so it's been a pretty consistent support zone. The number one thing I want to highlight about Chainlink is that as we actually zoom out here, what you have is a huge pennant forming where you've seen higher lows and lower highs for a long time. You see resistance falling into support and support rising down here, if you kind of even clear this away, rising into resistance, and you can see that. And so what this means is that the range on Chainlink has been getting tighter and tighter and tighter and tighter, and you can see it starting to really squeeze in here. And it goes back into the original thought that we were talking about earlier of, hey, large cap in the crypto market as a whole, it's squeezing. You're seeing these consolidation ranges tighten. You're seeing the clear push against resistance and support. And crypto is sitting at these key levels. And we're seeing this across the board. And Chainlink's no exception to this. On the weekly chart, which is what we're looking at here, you can see it very clearly. Chainlink's at this $12 support. It's at this multi-year trend line. It's at the 200-week moving average. And you're seeing just a lot of stuff happen around this price action. So I would be looking at this and saying, hey, this is a pretty important zone. Long from a multi-year perspective, this has historically been the area where Chainlink bounces off of. You look at 2023 and it bounced off this trend line. You look at 2024, 2025, now 2026, and it continues to find support and buyers around this area. So I'd be looking at this saying, okay, with that in mind, we know it's a historic level. If we do break down below here, you know, maybe we keep an eye on it if it tries to head back towards $10, because that would maybe be the next level. But if it does hold on here and it is able to hold on, you know, the next stop for resistance is, hey, maybe around the 200-day moving average, around $17. But towards the top of this big old pennant is probably putting it closer to $21, a little bit higher if it kind of goes on to the upside. So, you know, lots happening on Chainlink. I think they're pretty hard to be bearish about in the long term. If you are looking to get accumulation down here, just understand, like, hey, sometimes when you're accumulating down here, it might take a couple of months, you know, maybe a year to really rally. You know, here we could have seen, hey, people were buying down here around May, and it wasn't until the following March where it was really back up to the peak. And then you could have bought around August, and then maybe, you know, months later, it was up at its peaks in January of the following year. And you could have bought in April, and then it was up the following August. So again, we're not saying of like, this is a quick turnaround for the next day or two, but you know, just keep in mind, you know, it's historically been a half decent area of accumulation, obviously never financial advice, but this is more of a longer term play down here. Yeah. When we look at what history has shown us. What else we great. Got, Tebow? I saw we had.
That's
I think
unreal. That's yeah. We can do. We'll do Sui and then Pengu, and then we'll wrap it up. Unless anybody new has any suggestions. We got Ron. We got Noah. Anybody new? We'll do one more after that. But let's do Sui and then Pengu.
All right. Yeah. Let's take a look at both of these. Sui is one that I have been following. In fact, I have a custom Sui chart right here. Sui, you saw a pretty big area of support break here, and then you saw this breakdown happen, right? You had this trend line, and it was bouncing and bouncing and bouncing, and then it broke, and then the breakdown kind of just followed pretty aggressively afterwards. Similar story where it's like, hey, you have this local support area around $1.40 to $1.50, and that has been the primary support. I think that's really what you want to hold on Sui. Is if you can hold on to it, I think there's a decent chance where you go back up to maybe $1.90, maybe even $2. And that's going to be a big resistance. If you break here, you know, I want to be pretty careful. I think if you break here, it's in a gnarly spot. There's a chance that this goes back down towards at least $1, maybe lower. So that could be a 50% drop is something that's, or not 50, maybe 30% drop is something that's like on the table if this structure breaks to the downside. So I really don't want to see us break much below $1.30, $1.40. That's the big support. If we are able to hold this, I think you could easily rotate back towards $1.90 to $2. If you break this previous high, then the next logical area for this to go to is up towards $2.60, which is a pretty substantial run from where you're currently priced at. It's about a 75% rally. So you know, what I will say with Sui is it has seen some relative weakness compared to the rest of the market in recent months. And so I want to be a little bit more careful with it. But if it can start turning around and holding the support and getting back above some of those resistances, it could see some aggressive bids. But I would just want to be a little bit more hesitant with this one because it has been underperforming over the last 6 or so months. And with Pengu, similar story. You know, this thing's been underperforming for probably the past 7 months. If you're looking at it since July or so, in the last 180 so days, pretty gnarly retracement. You know, over 80% to the downside off the highs, I believe it was about 80% on the head, and it's back at the lows. And so you're seeing this come again, similarly, at an area where we've seen it kind of bounce off this level a couple of times. You really don't want to see it kind of break beneath these lows. You can see it's trying to put in a nice rounding bottom here, and you can see the structure start to form. You want to hold this. You want to hold higher lows from here. You want it to start turning around. Again, any kind of break lower beneath this structure, it's just not a good point to look at. You're already starting to see the short-term moving averages cross back to the upside. You're starting to see some consolidation. It's trying to put in this rounding bottom reversal in here. That's what you want to see continue from Pengu's structure side. If you get anything that's breaking to the downside, I think it's in a danger zone. And again, you're at risk of you know, decent volatility. Because as we've seen so far off the highs, When structure breaks, it gets a lot of volatility to the downside, and you see it with these moves. Boom, this one 33% drop. Boom, this one 40% drop. Boom, this one 40% drop. This one, boom, another 40% drop. This one 38% drop. So when you start breaking structure to the downside, it's not uncommon to see a 30, 40% drop in Pengu's price. So I would really want to hold the structure here for this rounding bottom and be a little bit careful, because if you do break that structure, we know what kind of volatility can come. The difference here is that, hey, with it trying to put in this nice rounding bottom, if you break above maybe 1.3 cents, there's not a lot stopping it from going back up to maybe 2.2 cents up in here around that 200-day moving average. So just as volatile as this can be to the downside when you break downward structure, if you break upward structure, you can see a lot of volatility to the upside as well. And so it's a little bit of a waiting game to see what will happen and what can happen here. But, you know, Pengu's a pretty big name. They got a lot going for them. So,
yeah,
I think the fundamentals of them are pretty decent.
Yeah, we're always, when I have Brian and Joe on the show, it's like there's always something going on. They just had a partnership with like Man City. They just did the outdoor game with the NHL. I mean, there, somebody in the comments here, Ron, was saying like, yeah, it's a pretty awesome real business with the plush toys and books and all that stuff. So, 100%. Something that, again, we're always going to keep track of for you at the Crypto 101 Pod. That was Brendan's just expertise deep dive of technical analysis. If you want that twice a week for an hour with Brendan, check the link below for his 6-week micro bull run trading course. Again, endless knowledge to learn from Brendan, and you get the live sessions, the Q&As, just pure access to Brendan every week. So check it out in the comments below. I got a link there for you. And one last ask, if you haven't yet, give this video a thumbs up, like and subscribe if you haven't. We really do appreciate it. It helps us grow. This has been a super awesome Friday. Brendan, thank you so much for coming and spending the time with us and giving us your expertise for technical analysis. A lot of news to break down, a lot of fun. I'm going to be back next week. I think we have Brian and Joe Monday. I'll put a post in the community to let everybody know what time that'll be. But that's going to be it for us today. I hope everybody enjoyed the show and have a great rest of your weekend. Thank you guys for joining. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye, everybody.
Hey, football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown in the game, but his teammate scores instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you a second chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. With BetMGM's second chance offer, you have a chance to keep the fun going after the first player crosses the goal line. Try a first TD score wager with confidence today. BetMGM, make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This specific promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, Pennsylvania, Puerto Rico, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. 1-800-NEXT-STEP for Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 for Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF for Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 for Puerto Rico. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards paid back and unrestricted withdrawable funds. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.